Hi, and welcome to She's the Boss Chats. I'm your host, Jules Brooke, and in the show, I interview amazing women and female founders about what it is that they're doing and why they're doing it. It's all about us lifting up the women around us. Fabiola Campbell, I am so excited to have you on She's the Boss Chats. Thank you so much for agreeing to do it.
Oh, no, the pleasure is all mine, Jules. It's fantastic to be here with you. And thank you for the invitation.
Oh, my pleasure. And I love what you're doing with migrant women, but I'm jumping ahead. So why don't we start with what is it that you're actually doing now and why, you know, what are you doing with your business right now? And why did you set it up, maybe?
So the main objective of what I do is to close the gap between employment or professional employment and migration for women.
So I love it.
One of the things that I've noticed, I am a migrant myself.
Yeah.
When I came to Australia, I just didn't know how to speak English, and I have to learn how to do that. But even for migrants with very high skills of English, it is not easy to find a job in a new country.
Of course not, because it's so much of it is who you know and your networks. And when you come to a new country, you have to start all over again, so you don't have them. So is that your full-time job? Is that what you run, the Professional Women's Migrant Women's Association?
So it's the Professional Migrant Women, and no, it's not my full-time job. It's my part-time job. I do work as a professional trainer.
Yeah.
An organization. So that's what I do. I combine the two things.
Right. Amazing. So what was it that made you go, right, I've got to set up an organization for these women, and being yourself as well. But what was it? Was there a light bulb moment where you said something that just tipped you over and you went, that's it, I'm going to set up this organization?
Yes. So I wouldn't say that it was a single moment, but it was a series of moments over probably 2 years.
Yeah.
And I got to a point in my career where I needed and wanted to do something else. I think I got myself into a place where I was performing professionally and I was kind of happy. But then, you know, I get to the 3 year mark in every job that I feel that I waste, or, you know, different opportunities. And I couldn't quite find the thing that I wanted. And the truth is that I didn't know what I wanted at the time.
Right.
So I started exploring different things, networking. I knew that I had a passion for, you know, connecting with people in community.
Yeah.
Connecting is one of my top values. I do have a passion for empowering women, working with women, helping women.
Yes, love that bit. So it all sort of came together.
And you know, yes, and being a migrant, you know, I did find myself in this space where there were many other migrant women like me, and it felt to me that there was like a gap,
yeah,
you know.
In the market, absolutely.
Yes, a few people started approaching me, asking me for help. Oh, how did you get the job? You know, how did you do this? And by the way, that has been going on for many, many years. And I help many of my friends along the years. But, you know, about a year ago, I started doing public speaking, speaking with people from different communities, migrant communities. And these questions keep popping up time and time again. And it's funny because it was about August last year, I was listening to a podcast on diversity, and the person being interviewed said that the best way to close any skill gap is through mentoring.
Right.
And that was an idea that stuck with me. And, you know, at the same time, I was getting all of these questions from women, from professional migrant women trying to break into the job market in Australia. And I think that at that time, things started to come together.
Yeah.
So How did that happen? I realized that number one, I did have the skills that I needed. So as a professional trainer, I am used to facilitate workshops, to introduce content, to share, to learn from others. So that was one thing. I have the skills to do it. Number two, I did have the experience, a first-hand experience or expertise of being a professional migrant trying to find a job in Australia.
Yeah.
And I think the most important thing was that I did have the desire.
Yes, and it was you a need point that drive.
It was a point when I said, I can do it and I'm going to do it, you know.
I love it.
It will be a nice thing to do. No, I can do it. I have the skills. I have the know-how. I have the expertise.
And I know that people need it.
Yes.
Yes, and, absolutely.
That's how, you know, I started doing this. And
fantastic. So
it's been a ride.
Fantastic. So what I'd like to ask you now is to take me right back to your childhood and tell us where you came from and how you have ended up in this role now and how it's all evolved. I want to hear about your entrepreneurial journey and your business and your career. So because you're from Brazil originally, that's right, isn't it?
No. That's a very tricky thing.
Okay, you tell the story, I'll listen.
Yes, absolutely. I was born in the Royal Women's Hospital in Melbourne, Victoria.
Ah.
Believe it or not.
Right.
So my family was living here in Australia for about 2 years. I was born here in the last year when of their life in Australia. And I migrated, I went back to Venezuela when I was about 6 months.
So why was your father here in the first place? Or why was your family here for 2 years? What brought that about?
My dad is a medical doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm talking about the 70s. And Melbourne was the place where the first kidney transplant was done.
Wow. Didn't know that.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. We have done so many firsts here. It's really fascinating. So my dad was sent from the university, his university, to study nephrology and to study how to do kidney transplants.
Right.
So that's why they moved to Melbourne for 2 years. That was the time that he was studying. Mm-hmm. And obviously the whole family moved here. And I was born here. You know, I was born here during those 2 years. Right. When my dad finished his studies, we moved back to Venezuela. And my parents, being Venezuelan themselves, we spoke Spanish at home. And even though my siblings learned how to speak English when they were little, I had three siblings at the time. But I'm one of six, so two were born after me.
Wow.
Venezuela.
That's a lot of brothers and sisters.
Oh, yes. Big family. So, we didn't keep English. We didn't keep up the English language at home.
Right.
But there was one thing. I was an Australian citizen by birth.
Right. The only one in the family.
And the only one in the family. And my dad was a person that loved Australia, and he always talked fantastic, about all his experiences in Australia.
He just loved it here, his time here.
And I think his dream was to come back to Australia at some point in time, and he hasn't.
Yet.
But what that did to me was to install that one, love for Australia, and he made me feel so proud of being Australian myself, you know.
Yeah.
So to have that desire to see my birthplace, you know, and to check it out, to see what it was like, you know, that thing of being Australian. So, you know, I grew up thinking and believing that I was Australian through and through, you know.
Isn't that funny? That's really that just sounds really funny to me, because we migrated to Australia, or emigrated to Australia from the Europe when I was 12, and my father was exactly the same. My mum and dad just loved Australia from the moment we got here, and forget barracking for anyone else in the football or the cricket. It always had to be Australia straight away. So I know that love that people have for the country when they first come here. But it's lovely that your dad took it back to Venezuela and brought you up thinking, you know, you're Australian, even though the rest of us aren't.
Yes. And I think that's very interesting because, you know, well, I did have my Australian passport. I mean, I have a birth certificate that proves that I am Australian.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
When I came to Australia for the first time when I was 27 years old, I had graduated as a professional. I had been working in Venezuela as a professional.
What were you doing? What profession were you working in?
Yes, I graduated as a criminologist.
I love that. And yes. and did you work as a criminologist over there?
Yes, I did. I did work for local government, and I did work for crime prevention.
Right.
But you know, there got a point in my life that I, you know, I did have to take the chance. I was single. I didn't have any dependents. I had a dream, and I had to take it. It was the right time to do it.
That is amazing, though. Lots of people would just have the regret that they never had done it. So it's incredible that you're here. How long ago was this, by the way?
That was 16 years ago now.
You're kidding me. Did you say you were 37 when you came?
27, but...
27. Thank you. I was going, hang on, you don't look anywhere near that old. Okay, so keep going.
Yes.
So how did you decide to actually do it? Did you say to your dad, look, I'm just going to go? Or what was that like?
I actually said that to my mom. A friend of mine said to me, hey, my cousin is moving overseas, and I'm going to the airport to say goodbye to him. Do you want to come with me? And I said, yeah, why not? So his cousin was a bit younger than me at the time, and he was migrating to the US. He has sold all his possessions, including his car that was like, you know, his most precious thing. And
yes.
He didn't know how to speak English. He was traveling with a tourist visa, and he was willing to risk it all to go to the US and to stay. He went with a tourist visa. And when I was at the airport and seeing him taking this big step, I thought, oh God, I wish I could do that. And then I said, hang on a second.
I can.
I can do that. And I speak better English than him. You know, I have no issues with getting a visa because I do have an Australian passport and I can't go. I mean, he was going to the US. I wanted to come to Australia, but then I realized I can do this. And that day I went back home. My mom was at home, and I said to my mom, I'm going to Australia next year. And she said, huh? Look, I think, you know, when I think back about that moment, I know my mom believed me from the time I said that. I don't think she was surprised, though.
Right. Because, well, she's heard your father talking about it all the time as well. So she knew what you'd grown up with, and she knew it was a good life for you over here.
I believe so. I believe so. And she didn't make a fuss about it. You know, she didn't say much at all. But that day I made up my mind. And 1 year later, I moved to Australia. I needed a year to save money to come to Australia, basically.
Amazing. So tell me what that was like. So what's it like when you land here, you've got no family, you've got no connections, you've got no job. How was that?
Well, can I just take you a little
Yes, of course. Of course.
So if you think about that Fabiola, that 27-year-old Fabiola that was a go-getter and could, you know, eat up the world in front of her and could do anything. And it was like a superwoman kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
There was nothing too hard for her. and she has achieved so many things. And moving to Australia was just the next natural thing for her to do, you know.
Okay.
And the other thing is that if you think about that person, she knew that she would conquer Australia as well.
And you have, totally. But I bet it was, but I mean, I know when I went to live in London for 5 years and I had family there, it was so hard. I don't think I've ever had such a difficult year to just establish myself and meet people and that kind of thing. So you do, and I felt like, oh my God, like England's just going to embrace me and I'll talk to anyone and it's going to be so easy. But it isn't always that easy.
Absolutely. And that's my point.
Yeah.
Because that superwoman stayed back in Venezuela. And
you I know, don't as, think so.
as soon as I put a step out of that airplane, I became a migrant. And right. As I said before, you know, my English wasn't very good at all. The first time I realized I was a migrant was when I went to customs and the person was checking my passport and I have filled my migration card and I put in there, you know, that I was a criminologist, occupation or something, you know. And then he goes and he said, blah, 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 blah. And I said, oh, could you please speak slowly? Because I can't understand. And the other thing that I understood from what he said was something like, how come you say that you are a criminologist and you are Australian and you don't speak English? And that was the moment when I realized that I was a migrant, you know. All that time that I thought I was Australian, all that, you know, all those emotions came crashing down on that very moment. And I haven't even left the airport. And I think that's when my migration journey started, you know. Then I realized that I just didn't know so many things about Australia. I didn't know about the food. I didn't know about the popular culture. I didn't know about some icons. And I didn't know about so many things that made Australian people Australian, you know. Right. And even though I was Australian in my heart, I knew that I had a lot of catch up to do. And the other thing, sorry.
No, no, you go and then I'll say.
Yeah, so, and it's exactly what you said before, Jules. All my superpowers were left behind and I have to start from zero. And starting from zero is about learning how to speak, you know, from that basic thing.
So can you just, but tell me when somebody has just arrived in the country and then has, I would say, that not very friendly experience with the customs guy, did you have anywhere to go? Had you booked yourself in? So, like, what do you do when you literally just arrive and you've got to catch a taxi or a bus from the airport? Where did you go? How did it all look?
Well, I was really lucky to have one of my parents' friends from so many years before. He was actually waiting for me at the airport.
Oh, thank goodness. Good, good.
Oh, yes, thanks goodness for him. I've met him a few times in my life because he had been to Venezuela before, so we knew each other. And he helped me from day one and he helped me navigate the system. Now, Super Fabiola thought, okay, in 6 months, I'm going to learn the language. And then after 6 months, I'm going to go and apply for a job and get a job as a criminologist because this is what I do.
Yeah, makes sense. Why wouldn't you think anything other than that?
The reality here was much, much different to that. And my friend who has been working with migrants for more than 40 years, the friend that met me at the airport, he said to me, oh dear, your English is so good. I reckon that in 3 years, you will be able to speak very well. And in 5 years, you will be able to understand the television.
Oh my goodness. Oh, whoa. But Spanish is so different from English. Like I know myself how hard it is the other way around. So I can only imagine. And I think when we spoke a while ago, I said I used to have a friend who lived in Spain when I lived in London, and she was a very quiet girl who was very self-contained and I would say not extroverted at all. And we went on a holiday to Spain with her to stay with her family. And she was the most outgoing, loudest person in the room every time. And I remember saying to her, I thought you were much quieter than that. And she said, when you speak in another language, it's so hard to try and understand the words, never mind show your personality, that you'd become a different personality. Did you find that early on?
Completely, completely. And I did have to grow into that person. You know,
Right.
I had to reinvent myself, to
Right.
have this personality in English, you know.
So, and do you tell me, do you still think in Spanish and then translate, or do you think in
No,
English now?
not anymore. Sometimes it's harder the other way around too. You know, when I speak in Spanish, I'm thinking in English as well, so
Oh, God.
it's quite interesting. But you know, the thing is, Jules, that it took me 3 years to find my first professional job.
Three
So,
years.
and I had everything going for me.
Yeah.
I did have, you know, I didn't have any problems with visas. I did have access to language lessons. I did have,
And you had a basic grasping of the language anyway. You obviously knew some English when you came,
thank
and a
you,
good
thank you.
career, that you left behind. So why did it take 3 years?
I think there are many different factors. You know, it's not knowing what to do. You know, so for example, the way I used to apply for jobs in Venezuela was very, very different to the way it is done in Australia, number one.
Ah,
Number
okay.
two, I think, like when you went to England or for many migrants, you know, I heard this story time and time again. Look, if I was in Venezuela, in fact, I moved cities when I was in Venezuela to find my first professional job. Yeah. But
Yeah.
the city that I moved to knew about my university, knew about my
Yeah, right.
hometown, knew, you know, there was a context around me, around my identity.
Yeah.
And all of that context was lost when I came to Australia. Nobody knew about my hometown, about my country, about my university. Nobody knew anything. That meant nothing. And it
Right.
was like starting from scratch. That's a big thing. Number two is that people don't have networks. So, for example, I often ask people, you know, how do you get your first job? Ah, you know, it was my mom's friend, or I was working in my parents' business, or, you know, it was my school friend, or, you know.
It's so true. They always say it's who you know, not what you know, when it comes to getting a job. And if you have no networks, then where do you even start? Because going to a recruitment company is a hideous, horrible, revolting experience. I just think they're awful.
And the thing is as well is that we take for granted those small jobs that we get when we are teenagers, but those jobs are stepping stones for, you know, the professional jobs that we aspire to have after we, you know, graduated from university or whatever we chose to
Yeah.
do. And we, as migrants, we don't have that. So it's a long process.
Yeah.
And
Was it
even,
a
you know,
very, very happy day the day you got your first job? I bet you were ecstatic.
oh,
Were
boy,
you very
yes.
happy?
Amazing, amazing. Look, and I have seen cases of people being successful at getting jobs, professional jobs, soon after they arrive. The other side of this is that they're mainly men. And I know that there is a lot of work to be done about, you know, self-esteem and about equal opportunities for women, gender equity, and all of these things. I mean, women make choices for their families, and I mean, and that's absolutely fine, you know. But at some point in time, it's more often that women get behind in their careers.
Absolutely.
And again, you know, After being 15 years in Australia and having all of these experiences in my life, I realized that I could help. Again, you know, I did have the skill set, I did have the expertise, I did have the knowledge.
Yeah.
And I was willing to share that with other women. So they didn't have to spend 3 years like I had, but they could reduce that time and be able to find that job. But what is a job for a professional migrant woman? You know,
well, that's my next question to you. What is it? I mean, what because I know, and I would not be alone. Almost all the women listening to this would know. If you talk to a taxi driver, for instance, and they're a migrant, they are often an ex-doctor, engineer, you know, scientist, all sorts of amazing jobs. And I say, well, why are you driving a taxi? And they say, because I can't get any work, or I've got to retrain completely. You know, it's so hard. So how does a professional woman who's on her own with no networks, how do you get a job? You tell me.
Yeah, so, and I think it's very important to understand the motivation of this woman, you know. She might be a superwoman from the place that she's coming from, you know. She has all that desire, that fire, you know, those skills that she needs, and she wants to give back. She wants to use her brain. She wants to be out there in the community making a difference. Yeah. With the skills, with the training that she's got, but she's missing a few things. She's missing about understanding of the local context, the local culture, the way people find jobs in Australia. And it's very, very interesting because although you don't have networks, you don't realize that you have to network.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true.
And that's probably one of the scariest things for professional migrant women. I mean, you didn't have to do that at home. You have your natural networks.
Yeah.
Those things happen natural to you. In here, you have to make a choice.
So, Fabiola, I'm interested to know, if it takes such a long time to get a job, are there migrant women who think about going out into business on their own? Are there the, what about the entrepreneurial women who say, I'm not going to stick around and wait for a job, I'm going to start something? Or is that just almost impossible when you've got no, you know, when you've got none of the cultural and you know, networking and the people and all the rest of it? Or do you find that quite a lot of, I mean, I'm just interested to know your experience of what an entrepreneurial migrant woman does.
Look, I've seen both.
Yeah.
And in fact, I am connected to a group of migrant women in business, and you should see the quality of businesses of that migrant women are
building,
creating in Australia. It's just amazing. Yes.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I know is that most women don't see, oh, not most women, some people, men, women, migrants or not, they don't see themselves as entrepreneurs, you know.
No, I know that. I understand. I mean, I spend a lot of time going, you can all be entrepreneurs, but, you know, it's not natural for some people as well.
Correct. And I think that a lot of people are just happy to be professionals and to work in their field of, you know, preference. And so, yes, I've seen many migrant women become entrepreneurs, and I have seen many other migrant women trying to pursue a career within their chosen field.
Right. Amazing. So what does the Professional Migrant Women's Association do?
Okay, so right now what we are doing is a mentoring program, and it's a 6-month mentoring program. During these 6 months, we give you all the skills that you need to learn what to do in how to get a job in Australia.
Right.
Now, it is easy for you to jump on Google and find how to create a resume and a cover letter. You can also find tips on how to do networking. You can find thousands of pages on how to do job interviews.
Yeah.
But there is one thing that I say to people, You know, I can give you a book on how to swim, but for you to learn how to swim, you actually have to jump in the pool.
Swim, yeah.
You know,
I like the
so
analogy. It's good.
we provide that self environment, that pool where you can, you know, start training. And
Right.
we provide a community. And why 6 months? Well, as a trainer and having done so much or having received so much training in my life, one of the things that I've noticed is that I can get knowledge, but if I don't put that knowledge into practice, I'm going to forget about it.
Of course, yes, very true.
And the other thing that I know is that finding a job for locals or migrants is not a 100-meter race. It's more like a marathon.
Right.
So I'm not promising anybody that you're going to find a job in a month or two. What I'm promising is that during the 6 months of the program, you will have all the support and you will learn all the skills and you will have all the opportunities to network that I can provide.
Perfect.
And some of our mentees have already moved on to professional jobs. I mean, we have a very, very special situation right now with COVID going on.
We do.
So the job market is way more competitive. But I also know that when women apply the tools that we are sharing with them within the program, they get results.
Yes. And the other thing is that I think that migrant women and men, but migrant women, you have a fire in your belly is an Australian expression, but there is if the fact that you have left everything and come here shows that you have the drive. So I would guess that most migrant women just don't give up easily. So it might take years, but we are not going to give up because we know what, we know that it's we'll get there in the end. And I think that that is going to stand you in very good stead when you think of what's going on at the moment, because a lot of Australians haven't had that adversity and they haven't got that resilience. That's not to say that they won't grow it, but you've got it already.
I agree with you 100%. I have seen it time and time again,
Yeah.
and that is the very thing that I say to my mentees.
That's their superpower.
If, I mean, you have options. You can quit now or you can keep going.
Yep.
But I know that quitting is not an option for most of the women that we have.
Yep.
They're fighters, they're resilient, and they go for what they want. So, yes.
Well, you're a fantastic example of that, that's for sure. So, listen, we haven't got too much longer, but just tell me, have there been any particular moments, in the last 16 years that you can think of that really made you sort of reassess things or change things in your life or change direction because something happened. We often talk about how challenges come along and what they do at the time is you go, oh my God, everything's hopeless. And then you look back a few years later and you go, that actually was a good thing because it made me go in this direction or it made me change. Have you had something like that happen?
Many.
Can you give me a couple of good ones?
Yes, sure. Look, in 2011, I started training myself as a life coach.
Yeah.
I love it. One of the things that I love is human behavior, and I did love learning about life coaching. I did set up myself as a life coach, and it was a big, big failure for me.
Oh, why?
Probably the right time,
Yeah.
the right circumstances. Sorry, the wrong time, wrong circumstances.
What did it teach you?
It taught me that passion is not enough, that you have to have systems and that you have to have a plan. And it also taught me that you still can love things and they don't have to be your career or your job. I think
That's very wise. That's very wise, that thing, that to say that, because, yeah, a lot of people try and turn their passion into a job when maybe they shouldn't. And there are also people doing jobs that really need some passion in it.
Yes.
So I understand, but yeah.
I did do a lot of networking around that time, and I did learn so many things about networking, and they were so valuable. But I did kind of quit that path as well. Some years later, I joined Toastmasters,
Yep.
and I was, for those that don't know what Toastmasters is a club where you can learn how to do public speaking. I loved it. I learned so
Right.
many things. I loved the people that I was learning with, and I think that at different points in times, so as I said before, when I came here, I was working as a criminologist, then I move into community development, then I move into personal coaching, then I move into facility management, then I move into
A wiggly
organizational
road.
training. Now, the beauty of what I'm doing right now with the professional migrant women is that it joins all the dots. And
Great.
it's something I could not plan 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Where all my success and all my defeats came together to make this perfect recipe.
Right.
And I'm able to use my public speaking skills, my networking skills, my coaching skills, my
What about your
criminology skills.
I was going to say, what about your criminology skills? How do you use them? You
I mean, as in
can
the
suss people
understanding
out.
of human behavior, and the cherry on top for me is that I can be a professional migrant woman doing what I'm doing.
That's just wonderful.
Because that is who I am. That's me with the accent and with my story and with my struggles and with my victories.
It's a very, very inspiring story, I have to say, Fabiola. One question that I ask everyone at the end of the podcast, and it's a sort of a silly one, but is there a some what we call quirky fact, so something a bit unusual about you that most people don't know that you'd be prepared to share with us? Maybe something you did as a child, or I mean, it could be anything really.
Look, I'm a very open person.
Yeah.
So most people know
Everything about you.
a lot of things about me. I love cooking, and I think I love cooking because I love eating. As a child, I used to sing in a choir.
There you go.
Yes, and I did love it. Look, I'm very enthusiastic and out there, and sometimes people are not ready for that.
Well, I think that's their loss, not yours. I think it's wonderful that you're like that.
I'm
Now,
a
the last questions are about your phone, only because I love apps on my phone, and I know not everybody does. So it may be that you don't use your phone very much for business, but if you do, what would be the two most useful apps on your phone that you use for business?
LinkedIn,
Yes,
LinkedIn,
very true.
LinkedIn, LinkedIn and the Google Suite.
And what's Google Suite? Oh, you
The Google
use that a lot
Suite.
on your phone, right?
So I do use email, calendar, Google Drive.
Yeah,
Without my
all of it.
Google Suite, I will be lost. And I love the fact that I can have everything at my fingertips, no matter where I am. So,
Yes, I very much agree. I very much agree. And I assume you don't have any games. Do you play on your phone ever?
There is one called 2048, and sometimes I, indulge myself on that.
Ah, good. Well, listen, Fabiola, thank you so much for this interview. It's been absolutely fascinating to hear about your story, and I'm sure everyone's going to find it really inspiring. You're an amazing woman. I love what you're doing. It's really important. And keep going, because you're making a difference to a lot of people's lives.
Thank you, Jules. I do appreciate the opportunity. And it's been an honor, you know, sharing my story with you. And I hope that your audience can find value in some of my stories. And yeah, they can contact me. I'm on LinkedIn, Fabiola Campbell, professional migrant women. Yep.
Fantastic.
Love to connect.
When I'm sharing it on LinkedIn, when I'm sharing this ad, I'll tag you and then everyone will be able to meet you straight away. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a fantastic day.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of She's the Boss Chats. For more information and to find out about our other initiatives, including our weekly lunch for female founders and our TV show, go to shestheboss.com.au.